This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on community radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
That's right, you are tuned to Community Radio 3CR, and it's very good to be back in the studio, Jake.
We're both in the studio. This is the first time for 8 or so weeks we've been both in the studio at the same time.
Yes, and it is excellent to be back here at 3CR on a Friday, I must say.
Absolutely.
And to be back live at 5 with you all listening out there. You're, of course, tuned to a Friday rave.
It's good to be in the studio, and I'm just thinking as that intro come up, after all these years I've been doing it, that intro, I still, good old Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs, gets me going.
Still gets you going. Yeah. Now, before we get going on what we're going to talk about today, of course, Radiothon is coming up here at 3CR, and the station needs $300,000 to keep going for another year. And we mentioned it last week, but now it is out on all of the channels. We've got a little Radiothon fundraiser and a 3CR info night, I guess you'd call it, coming up Monday week. That's Monday the 1st of June.
And where is it?
It's going to be at Hardout on Plenty Road in Preston. And it's right on the 96 tram and a short walk from Regent Station. So that starts 6:30 on Monday the 1st of June, where Uncle Robbie will be there. Our excellent current affairs coordinator, Karina Tilda from Slacker Radio, who you know from every other week after us, and Jacob and I will be having a bit of a yarn about 3CR, and there'll be opportunities to donate as well.
At Hardout, it's on the 86 tram line, and I was just there the other night because a good mate of mine, Eli, shout out to Eli, happy birthday for the other night. We had a big 70th birthday party for him there.
Yes, happy birthday, Eli. So,
what do you got? It's Radiothon. Look, $300,000, it's not a lot. If you've got a $300,000 lying around, or if you've got $1 billion lying around, I've got some bad news for you, and that is that the Australian Sovereign Defence Fund has stopped taking investments as of the end of April. So if you've got that money, you have nothing else to do with it but send it in to 3CR, because $300,000 isn't a lot. It's less than one missile, mate.
Less than one missile.
Less than one missile.
I think 3CR is a way better place to spend it. So, So on that.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, we spoke a few weeks ago in the things that we do to bring you this show, where we watched Dickie Miles do his National Press Club address. And in that, he emphasised the involvement of private capital and tapped super fund investments into the defence industry and building Australia's sovereign capability as part of the Integrated Investment Program. Now, this is not new. It was part of the defence strategy in 2024, but it was really, this has kind of been put to the, in action, I guess, for 2026.
It's taken off.
So this specifically refers to, this was an announcement by the Department of Defence back in February, I think on the 18th of Feb of this year, by Pat Conroy, which was tapping private capital partners to establish and manage what they're calling an Advanced Capability Investment Fund. Now, the aim of the fund is to invest in Australian small to medium enterprises, or SMEs, for the development of capabilities under AUKUS Pillar 2. Specifically, AI, autonomy, quantum technologies, cyber, and undersea warfare, which are the big parts of AUKUS Pillar 2, which we've spoken about on a Friday rave being the main part of AUKUS. The big part of AUKUS that no one seems to be talking about.
Yeah. Everyone wants to talk about submarines, but it's all this other shit.
Yeah, so for this fund, which we'll call the ACI Fund, the government will co-invest $500 million up to 49% in partnership with private capital. Now, to me, what this says, and anyone that knows me knows I'm not a financial wizard, so if I've got this wrong and you know...
Well, I can't help you, mate.
call the station and let us know. But to me, what this says is that the government's contribution to the fund will be capped at $500 million, but that it won't take over 49% of the share in investments. So they've got a spending cap, but not a percentage floor. So the percentage contribution and control that the government will have over the fund decreases the more that private capital invests. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a little bit of a cherry on the cake for private investors, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, although the terms won't be worked out between, the terms will only be worked out between the government and the capital investors, so we'll likely never know what they actually are.
Because that'll be commercial in confidence.
Exactly. So back in February, the government opened up requests for their expressions of interest for the ACI fund through AusTender, and that was what closed at the end of April. So as yet, there's no further information about the firms that have put forward expressions of interest, but there are a few players that have existed for a while, and some of you might know them, like Brindabella Bank. And
I've been thinking that you might run through a few of these for us.
Yeah, and so there are some newer venture capital firms that are also no doubt angling to get a slice of the pie. Mm. So before we get into those firms, private investment, context, private investment in defence technology historically has been pretty negligible due to what's called ESG guidelines, and that stands for Environmental, Social and Governance. And I mean, the ESG guidelines have a million and squillion issues.
They're only guidelines after all.
Exactly. Yeah. But you can understand why investment in weapons manufacturing would largely fall under an unethical business practice. However, that doesn't stop the Australian Sovereign Wealth Fund, the Future Fund, from investing in companies like Lockheed Martin and Albert Systems, but I'm not going to get into that today.
And for the last couple of years, there's been a real push in the investor circles and defence circles to get like superannuation companies to invest more in defence.
Exactly. And so, you know, currently there is talk in investment circles among the suits that control where the billions of dollars go about shifting those mandates under ESG so that they can throw the big bucks towards building the machines and technology of death that isn't stifled by these quote-unquote ethical guidelines. So ESG isn't an issue for Steve Baxter. He's the founder of a mob called Beaten Zone Venture Partners. And that is the only Australian venture capital firm to build a fund that is specifically for lethal weapons technology. And so we've mentioned Beaten Zone on a Friday rave before, but what we didn't mention at the time is that Steve Baxter is pushing for ESG mandates to be rewritten and for firms and institutions that exclude investment in defence on the basis of current ESG guidelines to be excluded or left out of offsets and financial benefits that they receive from the government. So if you're not going to invest in the development of weapons, Australian sovereign weapons, then you're not going to get this tax offset. Now, there's a multitude of reasons why everything in that sentence is wrong.
Everything in that sentence is wrong.
Yeah, but so it's a pretty interesting position for someone who spruiks the importance of sovereign defence to, this is a quote, protect our way of life, while simultaneously pushing for a rewriting on policy that Steve Baxter himself has said is integral to Western democracy.
Exactly.
Which is ESG guidelines.
Yeah.
So I can't make sense of it really, but
So in order to keep Australia free, we need to make the laws less free.
Yes. Exactly.
That's like the police with all their riot gear and all the rest of it to maintain our freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because the terrorists hate our freedom.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they say. But, I mean, Steve Baxter, he was a former shark on that investor show Shark Tank. So that probably explains why he's so cooked. But anyway, Beaten Zone is specifically targeting defence startups for export and filling the gaps of the US defence industrial base with good old Aussie weapons. So one company that they've helped get there is Arceus. And now that's a Melbourne-based company. They were absolutely at Land Forces in the Vic government pavilion at Land Forces back in 2024. And so this month, Arceus announced that it had raised the money to accelerate the development and the global deployment of its AI-powered sensing systems for autonomous platforms.
Right.
So another company that is invested in Arceus is called Salus Ventures. That's spelled S-A-L-U-S Ventures. And that started in 2023 by a bloke called Dan Bennett in partnership with a long-time investor called Martin Peck. And Dan Bennett is based in Sydney. And prior to starting Salus Ventures, no doubt with a little bit of crossover while he was, you know, fluffing his cushions for Salas Ventures. He was the managing director of Our Crowd, a global investment firm that started in Israel in 2013.
Oh, so I can't even comment on it.
So he was the managing director there for about 9 years.
Yeah.
So in December of 2023, which was just after the time that Dan Bennett finished up as managing director and became a venture partner of Our Crowd, Our Crowd announced that they had closed a $50 million funding round for the Israel Resilience Fund to support the development of, quote, the security situation. So...
And I say I can't comment on it because you make a comment on it that it's Israel, you'll get accused of being anti-Semitic. And I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm anti-Israel.
Yes, exactly. So Dan Bennett was the managing director of Our Crowd in the formation of this fund. And he was their guy in Sydney. And so at the same time as that, he was building his own venture capital firm to invest in Australian defence companies like Arceus that are now ready for global deployment.
Yeah.
So Salas Ventures also employed a bloke by the name of Mike Ferrari, and that's not a joke, his name apparently is Mike Ferrari, as managing director. And his CV is really something to behold. So prior to joining Salas, he was the Australian boss of Salesforce Ventures, who have their secondary research and development hub, the first one outside of the US in Israel, and in 2024 opened up a domestic data hub in Israel in connection with Project Nimbus of Amazon and Google fame, so that data could be stored in Israel in coordination with Israeli privacy laws. So this is in 2024,
right,
a year into the genocide. So before that, Mike Ferrari established and co-led the Sydney office of the CIA investment firm InQtel, now known as IQT. And before that, he was at Goldman Sachs. And
before that, where was he?
Virginia? Was he?
Oh, Virginia University.
I don't know. He's kind of like, the bloke looks like an AI render. So it's
I mean, Virginia University, you've got to say, that's, you know, the one that, the preferred school of spooks.
Mm. And so just, I guess this is just a snapshot of one of the venture capital firms that is getting in early and developing for these very specific government programs to get private capital investing in Australian sovereign defence.
They're looking for partners.
This is who they're looking for, the likes of who they're looking for partners.
And it's funny you say looking for partners, because Salas, their website sounds like a Tinder profile. Looking for meaningful partnerships with innovators, redefining capabilities in critical areas, unique experiences, identifying technologies, high potential, dual, it's crazy.
Yeah, and you look at any of these websites and the taglines and the thing they put up, it's just like, do they even look at themselves? Like, this is the cringest shit you've ever seen.
Yeah.
So there are others, and as I mentioned, Brinda Bella before. Now, Brinda Bella is kind of a long-term defence, like, merchant bank, the Australian Defence Merchant Bank, and we kind of spoke about Brinda Bella in connection with Southern Launch, who is launching rockets over Gugutha country.
Daniel Seduna.
Yeah, when we had Ani Sue on the show a little while ago. And another, Australian startup company, or no, are they Canadian? I don't know. Anyway, Hypersonics. And so they signed a deal in 2024 with Southern Launch about having progressive rocket launches. They do scramjets at Southern Launch, but also they've just finished a really significant funding round.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got orders through to 2028. So another one, and I guess I really suggest some of these names, you're going to find yourself in a rabbit hole, but you can just jump on your preferred search engine and have a look at them, because it does make your head spin. So
And when Mercedes says preferred search engine, of course, she means something other than Google.
Yes.
Or Bing.
Yeah.
Try DuckDuckGo.
Yeah, exactly. So there's another one called the 1941 Fund. And this is an exemplary case of the revolving door. I must say. And so it's a partnership between a defence consultancy and advisory firm, Bondi Partners, and Alliston Capital. Now, Bondi Partners is the firm that was started and he's the president of the former treasurer and ambassador to the US, Joe Hockey.
Boo-ish.
And includes the board of an advisory with Maris Payne and Mark McGowan and advises all the big wigs in weapons. It's kind of, I guess, the counterpart to Pine and Partners.
I would
say that's probably the best way to describe it. You know, they're kind of the two biggest ones and they do a lot of murky shit in the background. Yeah. Now, Alliston Capital started as the firm tasked with managing the Packer fortune and now makes up some of the country's wealthiest families. So this is kind of a match made in hell. And again, I just want to reiterate, when the government is putting out expressions of interest for private capital to invest in Australian weapons making and defence.
Yeah.
This is these are the companies and the peoples who are already primed and ready to take up that call. So
ready to go.
Yeah, so it's really, I mean, you know, they talk about national security, it's not security.
Well, it is security because look, you mentioned Beaten Zone before. Mm-hmm. Let me read you this straight off their website. Talking about the way the US is running out of missiles, and we've mentioned that before, to counter this, the report, the Pentagon is pushing ahead with plans to procure over 10,000 low-cost cruise missiles to expand the arsenal of freedom.
That's
10,000 low-cost cruise missiles to expand the arsenal of freedom. But this is Beaten Zone.
This is a joke.
It's
not a joke. It's terrifying. It's terrifying, but this is where we're at. And I think, you know, as we've said on a Friday rave all the time, it's all about the money.
Yeah.
And so as defence is tapping private capital and super funds to share in the bill of sovereign defence capability, what's actually happening is that the building of, say, Henderson Shipyard, or the development of defence sites that could be leased back to the government rather than an actual or perceived threat, or indeed never getting the subs, the investment from private capital won't come unless there is a guarantee on return. So from both private and super fund equity. So no investor is going to invest unless there is a guaranteed return on investors. In the case of super funds, it's returns for their members. In private equity, they're money-hungry pricks, and they're not going to invest unless they get a guarantee on return. So
you've got a problem with capitalism.
Who, me?
Yeah.
You don't say. So, as we've always said, the defence industry decisions aren't premised on anything except the flow of capital. And so if Australia were to get private capital and super fund investment into, I mean, because of ESG guidelines as they stand at the moment, which are dodgy, private capital can invest in storage and manufacturing and distribution facilities for missiles if they would like. But
and dual use things like AI and satellites and all that.
And so for the development of the weapons and the use of the facilities that the government hypothetically will probably lease off private enterprise would need to provide that guaranteed. So the decision to ensure the development of missiles so that you can fill those factories or, you know, manufacturers for those is a financial one rather than anything under national security. And so in the Henderson shipyard, they get private investment into the Henderson shipyards. It's like, okay, oh no, the subs aren't going to be here. We've got to use these facilities because we need to promise the investors a return.
Yep.
Otherwise the government is liable for those costs of, off return, and so we better just fill them with US subs or UK subs or UK missiles or, you know, a big part of the guided weapons and explosive ordnance, which is the development of missiles for the arsenal of freedom, is about tapping private equity to build all of the infrastructure or help build the infrastructure. And then the government can keep its defence budget kind of where it wants to.
Kind of where they want it to be.
Where they want it to be so that it doesn't get voters offside. But then also with this investment fund, you're going to move that then private capital is going to be in control of defence investment. They're going to have
an inordinate amount of influence. And I just want to pick up on something you said there. You said the government's tapping into this venture capital funding.
Mm.
I'd take exception with that. I'd say it's the venture capitalists tapping into government funding.
Yes.
The money's going from us to them, not from them to us. We lend them the money to build a factory or a port, and then we occupy it and we pay rent. They collect the rent. They make the capital gains.
And they'll get a grant to build it.
And they'll get a grant to build it. It's absolutely, like, you cannot make this shit up.
No.
How financially, how fiscally irresponsible it is.
Yeah. But I mean, it's all in the figures, Jake. You can look at the budget. All of the figures are there.
Oh, mate, you can't. Not with this budget, you can't.
Well, we might. Anyway, so we'll probably get into that. And this, and again, but it's like this is all part of AUKUS Pillar 2 of like AI. There's data centers, dual use capability. All of these things that they're tapping private capital for is what they call dual use. And you need not. If you've listened to a Friday rave, you know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
You're listening to 3CR.
All right, well, in other news.
An apartheid-free zone. 3CR's Committee of Management has passed a declaration formalising our commitment to a free Palestine. As an apartheid-free zone, we're committed to boycotting Israel's regime of oppression. We stand firmly against apartheid in Palestine and encourage other organisations to join us in this struggle. Visit our website to read the full declaration and learn more about our commitment to justice and liberation for Palestine and the Apartheid Free Zone movement.
You can tell we haven't been in the studio together for a while.
Well, that's what I get for not wearing my headphones. But in other news, Trump made his second visit to China last week. Mm-hmm. Leaving a few days before Putin got there for his 45th or 40-something visit anyway. And the contrast between the two visits couldn't be starker. Trump and Xi Jinping came out with no agreements, although Trump claims that they have an understanding. Putin left with 40 signed declarations, even though he didn't get the one he was really after, which is the 2,500 pipeline between Russia, kilometre pipeline.
So he got the other 40, not that one.
He got the other 40.
Yeah.
But let's stay with Trump for a moment, because really it's China-US relationships that's driving Australian foreign policy and military posture, not the one between Russia and China. And there was something significant. Excuse me. There was a big change in the relationship. Did you see the video? Look at the video footage of Trump hunched over, walking towards Xi Jinping, who's standing up a step. You could read the power dynamic.
Mm. Even the photos, you know, kind of bowed over.
Yeah, yeah. But more importantly, I want to talk about a thing that he's spoken about, that has been spoken about, but I'll attack it a bit differently, maybe. You've probably heard it if you go more than the front page of the papers. The Thucydides trap. Now, as I say, you need to go further than the front page, but there are people talking about it. It's the story of Thucydides, one of the old Greek bloke, the historian who wrote the history of the Peloponnesian War back in the day. Mm-hmm. It was a bestseller back in the day, I believe. Back then, Sparta was the main military power. Yeah, when I was a boy. Sparta was the main military power, and Athens was the up-and-comer. And they put aside their differences in order to fight the Persians. But then after they collectively beat the Persians, they went into a Cold War standoff. And Thucydides was saying that when you have a rising power and a failing power, that it's difficult to not have for them not to come to war.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to work out a way that don't come to war. He failed at Athens, trashed Sparta. And I hope I haven't given away, I should have given a trigger warning for that movie. But more recently, when Thucydides' trap has been used lately to describe the phenomenon where there's a rising power and a waning power, war is pretty much inevitable, I reckon. And the interesting thing is that this is the third time that Xi Jinping has invoked the concept with US presidents.
Mm.
With Obama in 15, when he said there was no such thing as the Thucydides' trap. with Biden in 2024 when he said there didn't need to be a trap. And now last week saying pretty much, let's not. But it's clear who's growing and who's declining. It was, I reckon this was the first meeting between Xi Jinping and the US president where he was in the better position. And it wasn't just because it was on his turf. Look at the issue. Trump, what have you got, 425, looking for support to end the blockade of the Straits of Hormuz. After the meeting, he claimed they reached an agreement and that China's position is that the Straits remain open. But China's saying, nah, they're saying the Strait is open. They're happy to pay the fee. And Iran's not closing it. They're just imposing a fee, just like Egypt does, just like Panama does.
It's not extraordinary.
It's not extraordinary. But the real issue, of course, is Taiwan, and it wasn't even raised in the meeting between them. And in the couple of minutes I got left, I want to talk very quickly about this. And it was raised with Putin, who signed a statement opposing Taiwanese independence in any form. Xi Jinping has made it absolutely crystal clear in recent times that he wants to bring Taiwan back to Chinese control. And soon, the question is whether the US will get involved. And, you know, not when and if it all happens. And I quote, Ben, now the problem is, let me say, oh gosh, I'm running out of time. But what happened was China told him he needed to pull his friggin' head in on Taiwan. And so they were just about to sell $14 billion worth of new military equipment to them. So as Trump was leaving on his way back on Air Force One, he was asked a question, is that arms sale going ahead? And he said, oh, I need to think about it. I need to talk to the person in charge of Taiwan. Now, that's the important thing. That's the important thing. For the first time, to not use Lee Chang-tae's title, President of Taiwan. All right.
And to also falter on a previous agreed deal.
Yeah, and now you've got the Democrats and the Republicans, or, you know, the both of them hassling Trump to go ahead as quickly as possible with this arms sale because they want a war in Taiwan. Because it won't be directly on America. It'll be us and Japan and, you know, possibly a couple of other countries. And it's all about making the money. So remember, while the world looks at Trump like a buffoon, and he is, that's not the real issue. The real issue is that regardless of what president you have, the arms companies are going to lobby for more arms sales. Labor or Liberal, Republican or Democrats, they'll dance to the tune. And it's one thing to see Trump as a buffoon. The trick is to see all the performing monkeys, the rest of them.
That's all from us at A Friday Rave Today. Radio MNT are in the studio up next. And just a quick reminder, there is a National Sorry Day rally coming up this Tuesday, the 26th at the Preston Town Hall. There'll be a live cross with Gav on Billabong Beats from the rally. But we'll be at you next week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.